Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. We have our special edition today of The Pioneer's Path. I'm one of your hosts, Katie Galley, and I'm joined, of course, by the one and only Tim O'Connor. Hi, Tim. How are you doing?
Well, I'm one and only today, Katie. How are you?
I'm doing great. So who did you bring in studio with you today?
Well, Miss Katie, today we've got Walt Taylor, who's a visionary for GWT to Energy. Walt, welcome.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Katie.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And Katie, thanks for that introduction. As usual, the music is amazing.
Well, thanks. Glad you like it.
Yeah, and the sound levels are amazing. So when we got here, we basically surrounded Walt with small bottles of water. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're sending him the right message. Like, this is really going to be a sweater today, right?
Yeah, the air is not on.
Well, speaking of air, it's amazing. That just happens to be sort of in a similar space that that you do at work with your business, GWT to Energy. But before we really get into the work side of Walt, first I want to welcome you here and just thank you for wanting to be in the studio and pouring back into that visionary community that is out there, maybe untapped. Maybe they don't even know that they're visionaries. You may not even know how visionary-esque you are, but I can tell you that based on my interactions with you, you're a visionary. So I can't wait to hear that story and share it with our, I think we're up to 4 listeners now. So,
well, I'm not listening. So
3 listeners now. I can't even get previous guests to listen. So, but anyway, I'm kidding. Well, Walt, thanks again, man.
Yeah. Glad to be here.
So, the name of the show is Pioneer's Path. I can't wait to hear about yours. Who are you? Tell us about your path.
Sure. The biggest, I think, thing that when I look at my path was I spent most of my life in corporate America. And something inside of me, I felt like it was the Lord always telling me, this is not your path. You need to do your own thing. And eventually, he kind of made that happen for me, whether I liked it or not. And through that process, I didn't necessarily like it, some of the parts. But regardless, for me, what we do at GW2 Energy is we work with the restaurant companies to help them reduce their utility expenses. Mm-hmm. For me, I've always worked in restaurants, worked at Chick-fil-A's growing up. As a teenager, as probably 75% of us do, right? So got a great idea of how restaurants work and the things to do there. And what I learned there was I love saving money for the company, whether it was a way that we scheduled people or whatever. Graduated Auburn and all of the folks out there say War Eagle. So
we are in a soundproof studio. I do not hear that screaming eagle. But anyway.
And the wife's in Alabama. So that we don't talk much. But regardless.
Bitterness.
But regardless. Out of college, I pretty much started working for Waffle House right out of college. And what a great experience. Great people. Loved everybody that I worked with there. The CEO there's named Walt. My wife used to say that she married the wrong Walt. So, but anyway, Walt is a great guy and he does wonderful things. And really, thanks to him, I was able to work within the company, him and another gentleman named Richard. And those two guys really took me under their wings and allowed me to perform really well. And again, love the people there. And the experiences there, you learn faster than I would anywhere else. It's a very fast-moving environment, very production-oriented. And they care about saving money, which is something I love to try to do. So we would change, whether it was, where we ordered tile from or wherever it was, we would do different things to try to save the company money, which for me is like putting a puzzle together, right? And so as I started doing that, I eventually started getting into the equipment side of the business, which is all about energy stuff. And again, they allow you to run until you can't run anymore, basically. And so I said, well, what's a different way that we can save money? Because we've...
You mean like in corporately, they give you a lot of leeway.
Yeah.
Right. Got it.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically we put the best athletes on the field and you perform. And if you don't perform, well, that's a different path. But regardless.
Yeah.
and so they allowed me just kind of run with it. And one of the things I got to do that I probably wouldn't have gotten done anywhere else is I was able to gather a group of other restaurants and get together. And we went to the Georgia Power Public Service Commission and it was able to create a rate just for franchise restaurants, basically. Wow. So that's the side that not many people get involved in. You know, you play with the equipment, you do these things, but then when you get on that side of the business, it's a totally different atmosphere. It's a political atmosphere. You're competing against other people to try to get lower rates. And it's it took two different rate cases to get that done. Mm. But that just gives you an idea of all the paths that energy will take you. And so I had an opportunity to work with Arby's, who eventually went and bought Wendy's. Mm-hmm. Office was actually not far from the studio here. And do basically the same thing, which was a lot of good people there. And the one things I learned there was how to network better because they were big about finding out what was going on in the rest of the restaurant industry and how are other people doing things. Where Waffle House was more of, you know, let's focus on what we do and just try to be the best we can be. Mm. Arby's was more about let's learn from others, not make the same mistakes they did and try to do it better. So that was a great opportunity for me. And then going from a privately held company to a publicly held company was just what's important to those is not necessarily different. They still want to make money, but the process is different. And what I learned there was incredible. And what I learned was how much more I enjoyed a privately held company than a publicly held company because they think longer term, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not trying to please shareholders. So they can make decisions that are real long term that may not make sense right now, which gave me a lot of, you know, the vision. Mm. You can get a vision a lot better in a privately held company, I believe, from my experience. And then from there, from Arby's and Wendy's, when they started merged together, and then later they disassociated with each other, and Arby's was sold off, had an opportunity to work with an energy consulting company, learned a lot there, had an opportunity to work for another one. And then after that one, the owner and I decided, you know, you can probably do this on your own, not with us, because they were more an industrial energy consulting company. Mm-hmm. I was strictly restaurants.
Right.
And we came to agreement that it wasn't working for us to work together. So I had an opportunity to go off on my own about 4 years ago, this November, 4 years ago. And so, and the Lord put all that in place. Mm-hmm. And without him and his vision, you know, this would never happen. And so, thanks to him and a very understanding wife, who is actually in Paris today. She is a flight attendant with Delta and she's in Paris today.
I heard all Alabama fans actually got invited.
Probably so.
I think that was why she's there.
Yeah, that could be it. But you know, thanks to her and her working allows me to do a lot of this stuff.
Right.
You know, I have a lot of respect for people that can go out and start their own business, knowing that I've got to provide for my family and provide benefits for my family and all this. And I didn't have to worry about that with my wife working and all our benefits with her work and not mine. So.
Well, I mean, making a leap out of corporate, well, first off, to you know, it's not that uncommon to start off in corporate and then go out on your own after they've taught you some things. I look at it as paid training, or you know, they pay you to learn how to do things. But there are a lot of people that just, you know, rest on the comfort of their corporate pillow as long as possible, which is fine. They don't ever step out, and you know, they live there under the blanket, which is fine. But when you do step out, that's scary. Right.
Very.
Now, whether you're forced out or whether you leap out, you know, that really doesn't matter. You're out.
Right.
And so describe, I mean, how did you find the comfort that you're doing the right thing?
Well, I mean, that is, I can tell you the story about that. I mean, that's a really easy story. The last consulting company I talked to you about that was the industrial, more industrial based. We had gotten a big national account, a restaurant national account that we were working with, thanks to some work that I did, obviously. Mm-hmm. When I left, the restaurant company and the owner of this other consulting company got together and said, it's not best for us to be together. Mm-hmm. And so one day I got a conference call from them, and they said, we would like for you to take this role. So day one of me basically on my own, all of a sudden I had a national account working with me. So that's only a God thing, right? I mean, that just doesn't happen.
Yeah. Can I hand you your new book of business, please? Thank you.
Exactly. Right. And the understanding of the owner of the other consulting company, not one to try to keep that all to himself. I mean, that's unheard of.
was it a question of core focus?
Yes.
Okay. So that they didn't do what this thing required them to do. Correct. So, and did they recognize that that was your purpose and cause and passion?
Right. Yes.
And so they just kind of put two and two together.
Good. Exactly.
So that was really the birth of your business.
Correct.
Tell us about your faith walk through that process. I mean, even though you had a built-in book of business,
right?
What does that look like on a day-to-day basis to, in practical terms?
Yeah. Well, you know, day-to-day, it's, you know, the hardest thing for me is grabbing more clients, right? I mean, mm-hmm. for me, once I've got them and I can work with them and show them the things to do, that's the easy part. Mm-hmm. That's the fun part to me. That's where I get my juice is, mm-hmm. hey, can we save a dollar here, $2 there? That's where I really gravitate to. Mm-hmm. Talking to people about that's easy to talk about, mm-hmm. but getting people to identify that they do have a problem sometimes is difficult because in the restaurant business, they understand labor costs, they understand food costs, but they see energy as a fixed cost. Mm-hmm. when you can control how you use your energy, just like you can control food costs, just right. like you control your labor costs, but they just see it as a line item on the P&L. And so, you know, getting them to understand that and put that's kind of a paradigm shift for them.
Right.
Because they just, you know, that's not a, they don't think they have direct impact on that, but they really do. And so whether we can do some things to change their water and stuff like that. So that part has been the biggest struggle for me, learning that I can't do that on my own. I've got to lean on others to help me tell that story because it is a story. And that's one of the things, that has been the biggest struggle for me is doing that type of marketing technique and really reaching out and getting people to convince them that, not convince them that they have something they don't have, but get them to understand that there is an opportunity there. Mm-hmm. And then, so that is a day-to-day faith walk. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that's something that we pray about every morning and we discuss and say, look, Lord, you know, what's the way that we need to walk that way? Mm-hmm. How do we, you know, increase our opportunities, the Jacob's prayer, right? You know, increase mm-hmm. our opportunities or the prayer Bayez, I guess. You know, increase our opportunities, protect us from evil. That's something we pray every day. And we talk about that. And so, you know, the national client that we have has been wonderful to us. I believe we've done a good job for them. They said, hey, we'll recommend you to everybody, but you know, that's not their focus. Their focus is their own business.
Right.
So, you know, they've done a good job of talking great about us when they have had the opportunity, but you know, that's getting people to call them and ask them about that. They're, you know, they've got more important things to do.
Right.
So,
right.
That's the day-to-day faith walk for me is, you know, going down that path. And my wife has been there with me and she doesn't meddle in the business per se. She just asks, hey, how's it going? Anything that I need to do? You know, do I need to start working more? It's right. usually the biggest question. I said, no, everything's fine. You know, we've not grown, you know, not lost any meals or anything like that.
Right.
And so, but I don't know if that answers the question that you asked, but that's probably the way that I see that.
Yeah. So it's interesting to peel back the hood, right? Open the hood rather and look right. inside what's underneath, because a lot of times if you don't actually run a company or, you know, you're not in that visionary seat on what we call an accountability chart, you know, you'd think that, oh, well, he's got it all figured out. No, that's pretty easy. And oh, look at that. He had a book of business handed to him. He has no issues,
right?
That sort of thing. And you and I both know that's couldn't be further from the truth.
Absolutely.
So what you said was, I thought was pretty interesting. So John P. Cotter is like the godfather of corporate change. I love the 8 steps he lays out to create meaningful change within an organization. The very first step is recognizing that they're or feeling a sense of urgency. So what you just said was really interesting. You got to get people into that first step in the change management paradigm shift to say, you're bleeding cash.
Right.
And you can fix that. Do you go in and quantify the costs that they're currently having right now and versus what they could have? I mean, is there a process to that?
Yes. What we'll do is a lot of times, if they will agree to send us their utility bills, mm-hmm. we'll take a look at it. And since I've been in the industry for so long, yeah. I've got a good idea of, oh, we could probably save you anywhere from 3 to 15%, depending mm-hmm. on what the location is, how many locations you have, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So we ask for, we'd like to get a year's worth of utility bills to review that. We'll also walk the sites. What kind of lighting do you use? What kind of faucets do you use? What kind of equipment do you use? Mm-hmm. air conditioning systems, thermostats, all those things, because like anything, what we're looking for is to help our clients get a 2-year ROI or better. Mm-hmm. And so we won't even present a project to them unless they ask that doesn't have at least a 2-year ROI. Mm-hmm. So typically for a restaurant, which restaurants tend to be the per square foot energy hog of the country. Mm-hmm. They're really small, but they're manufacturing facilities if you think about it.
Right.
And so it's also the most difficult building to work with. When you talk to most energy engineers and things like that out there, they don't really want to mess with the restaurants because there's just too much going on. Mm-hmm. For me, since that's all I've ever known, I get it. I understand right. what you're dealing with. And it's also getting people to understand that you know the industry, right? I mean, they have to have faith that you're not just going to walk in and start changing their operations. And so what I tell them, you know, from the day one is, look, I don't want to touch your cooking equipment. That's how you take care of your guests. Mm. What I want to do is take care of those things that your management team doesn't need to worry about. Mm. You know, whether that's when the lights come on or whether or not what the air conditioning set at, when does it turn off and on? Those are things that should just be automatic. They don't have to worry about it. You know, we'll look at their system, and if we install our energy management system in it and we monitor it for them, we can let them know when the air conditioner's not working like it should and right. get them to call someone out. So that's one thing I did want to mention, that we've got a call center that we handle calls all over the country mm-hmm. to take care of people with their air conditioning systems. And one of the passions I had with that was a small town that I grew up in Northwest Alabama called Double Springs. All of our call center employees are based there. Actually, all but one, I guess. And we have ladies that work with us. I grew up with a single mother for most of my life. And so we hire single moms, caregivers that are ladies that can't get out of the house. They're all 1099 employees. But, you know, whether it's moms that need to make some extra money just so their kids can play baseball or whatever it is, that's been our focus, is to pour back into that community because that's where both my dad and I grew up. Yeah. And so it's a small town. If I graduated high school there, my graduating class, the entire class would have been 30 people. Mm-hmm. So dramatically different than living here in Atlanta.
Right.
So my kids graduated from a local high school, and I think they've got 1,000, 1,500 in their class. So they've grown up in a dramatically different environment than I did.
Right. Right. I love that story. I've heard it before.
Right.
You know, why you're there and what your purpose, cause, and passion is around giving back to the local community. Single moms, man, that's a big part of my life too. Because right. I mean, I grew up with a single mom, and you know, being raised by one for the first part of my life, I get it. And so, what I think you're doing there is pretty incredible. So walk us through, a little bit more of how the business is structured, internally, because you mentioned a call center there. Mm-hmm. How else are you supporting your clients? I mean, we had a front end audit and a back end call center.
Yeah. So, one of the key things, and I think this is something that I'd built the company on, was because my wife's a flight attendant, I built the company around the company being able to be run from anywhere in the world. And so everything we do is cloud-based. That's why all the people that work with us in the call center, all their software, their phone, everything comes through the cloud. And it allows us to be able to pick up and go. One of the key things is that we have multiple forms of backup in case of any national emergency or bad weather or whatever. Mm-hmm. If, you know, into our, to our place, we've got two different internet companies coming into the place. Mm-hmm. So we always have 100% backup. But then when we reach out to the call center, they've got 2 and 3 different. So mm-hmm. I feel like that separates us. Mm-hmm. For us, when we go through that process of reviewing everything, we'll find outliers in the different restaurants. So let's mm-hmm. say they have 10 restaurants. And if they're all basically the same size, do about the same amount of business, but one's using 15% more energy than the others, well, there's an outlier. Mm-hmm. And why is that? So we'll go and take a look at that. And so we start driving into those details, whether it's equipment's not working efficiently, mm-hmm. whether it's, what happens a lot of times is photocells that turn the lights on and off outside, mm-hmm. they fail for whatever reason. So the lights stay on 24/7. I'm sure you've been mm-hmm. by parking lots where the parking lot lights are on during the day and mm-hmm. it's a beautiful day like today. And you're like, why is that on? Mm-hmm. And parking lot lights use a lot of energy. So mm-hmm. that process takes us there. And then we start recommending projects. Mm-hmm. Hey, let's look at, do you need to replace this? Do you need to replace that? some of the stuff we may sell, like our energy management system is something that we sell, but we made to reach out to him and said, look, we've got a lighting partner for LED lights. If you'd like to go with LED lights or these other things, we can help you spec them out, help you bid them out, make sure you get the best price possible. And then either work with your own electrician or plumber or whoever it is, or we can find one for you. Mm. We prefer to work with who they're already familiar with and let them pay them direct. We're not interested in making the money on the labor because we'd rather their people be familiar with everything that we do. So there's no question about how it was done and why it was done. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing. We work with several companies out there that whoever the technician is doesn't understand what they're working on. Mm. And what they'll do is they'll bypass all the controls that were put in there to save the company money because they don't understand it. So with that lack of understanding, then they lose all the investment that they put in. Mm. So that's one of those reasons it's important. I don't know if I've hitting on the questions that you asked.
No, that's good. So, I mean, you have a series of regular reporting that you get back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The regular reporting, it's a monthly report we do. Mm-hmm. We look at utility bills, you know, lay all those out on a report and say, here's your uses of all your locations. Here's what we're seeing as positives, negatives. What's driving that? You know, is it whatever it may be? That's our job to help them find out what's driving that. That's talking to the local management at the restaurant and getting engaged with them and getting an understanding of what they're like and find out, you know, why is that? You know, one of the biggest things we usually go into is we want to cool the building for the guests, not for the employees. And most restaurants you go in, it's pretty chilly because the employees are running around like crazy trying to take care of everything. And we definitely get that. But ultimately, it's the guests that we want to take care of. And I think management usually understands that, you know, necessarily than their team members. Right. But once they understand that, then, you know, that's just a process of, okay, everything, because we're not talking about let's take it to 80 degrees inside the building. We're saying, let's say it's 74 instead of 68. And so that usually works out. But those are the things that we're looking for. I mean, the reporting is something fun to show them that this is where you were last year. We'll look at weather, how it's impacted that. You know, this is, if you had not done this change, this is what it would have cost you. Mm-hmm. Here's what weather costs you, because if it was a lot hotter this year than last year, there's what that temperature change would be. And, you know, it's not black magic. It's all just science and math. More math than science a lot of times to show that. And a lot of times it's just explaining our clients, you know, get them educated on what they're looking at.
Right. So it sounds like they're getting a totally different cut with a scorecard item or a series of scorecard items that they've never even considered before.
Exactly.
Which comes back to that, X is our fixed costs and good luck, we'll just have to do something different.
So, exactly.
Interesting. Let me shift gears for a second. This actually came up recently with me. We talk about creating a vision and creating a plan. And please tell me your thoughts on this. So on one hand, there's this thing, and I'm actually looking at a document that you pulled together. It's a version of what I teach my clients to do with a vision traction organizer. But to set a plan in motion, to put it out there, and then to create meaningful steps along the way as interim steps to achieving that long-term vision is kind of on this side. But then on the other side is, how do you abide in the day-to-day along your path, right? Because we can very quickly do an end run right around where God's plan A is for us into a really crummy plan B for us, for ourselves. How do you balance that?
You know, That's a good question. And I wish I had the answer to that. I can tell you what I do and what I attempt to do. You know, one of the things that I definitely do is I reach out to a lot of godly counsel. You know, one of the gentlemen that helped me put a lot of this together was my associate pastor at church. Hmm. He has a vision for businesses. And so I latched onto that and said, okay, walk me through what you do. And one of the things that we walked through with him before we even got to the business side was a process called Unique. Where we learn what our unique calling is that God has for ourselves. Then I said, hey, his name is David Rhodes. I said, Dave, do you have something like this for business? He was like, yeah, kind of. Would you like to be the guinea pig for that? I was like, sure. So we kind of went down that path. And as you and I have discussed, whether it's EOS or whatever, it had a very similar path to what we were talking about with Unique on a personal basis. And so, you know, the thought was, how can we deliver that message, not only of how to say right business-wise, but how do we live our lives in a godly manner? Hmm. And it's interesting. I was reading a book the other day, and it talked about, I believe it talked about Henry Ford. It talked about Steve Jobs. And it talked about several other people like that, Jack Welch, all these great leaders. But when I read about those leaders and when I've looked at them, their family lives were
a wreck.
A wreck. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, I don't want to be that guy.
Right.
So how do I stay on a path that my family life is important and my business is important? And I think those can don't have to be mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. I think God wants us to do that. Matter of fact, as you study more in the Word, you realize that Jesus was in the marketplace more than anywhere else. Mm. He didn't spend his time in the church. He spent his time out in the marketplace. So to me, that says without a doubt, our work matters to God.
Right.
And how do we go about that? And I spend a lot of time thinking about that, reading about that, and how do we influence others through our work? And that's not to say that we don't make mistakes, and it's not to say that I'm a perfect Christian, because none of us are, but I try to recognize when I make mistakes and apologize for them. And it's just like, you know, I think we'd all agree in a business, we know we're going to make a mistake, but how do we respond to it? And the same would be true for our own lives. Is we're going to make mistakes, but how do we respond to it? What are the things that we do to make sure that we don't do that again? Or if we do, that we've learned from it. And maybe we don't do it to the same extent. It's just like a business process for me.
Yeah.
So that's really kind of how I look at it. And then, for me, was, again, what I realized in the corporate lifestyle that I was in is that even though my wife had this great job where she was traveling all over the world, I didn't get to spend any time with her. And so one of the things that allowed me with the job I have now is I do have an opportunity to travel with her. Mm. And I can see that our marriage has just blossomed from that when before it was on really rocky road. Mm-hmm. And it was more me, you know, because I need to get to this position. I need to do this. I need to... And, you know, and commuting here in Atlanta, obviously, was part of that. Right. Those that commute spend a lot of time on the road. And so for me, being able to have a job where I can do that and be more balanced in my life, it's also allowed me to be more active in our church and do things I've always really wanted to do to have an influence on others, positive influence, hopefully. Hmm. And get involved with other groups. As you know, there's ISI that we're a part of. And, you know, to have a, for lack of a better term, you know, a board that you go to once a month and say, hey, here's what I'm doing. What do you think about it? Sometimes you don't like to hear what they say, but that's okay. I mean, you learn from getting bumps and bruises.
Right.
And so it's great to have that. And, you know, whether it's ISI or, you know, Dave, that church that I deal with, those guys really kind of give me some solid spiritual background and backbone to lean on. So I think that's more or less how I do that.
Right. Yeah. It is interesting when you set that vision, and if it's built around your passion, which it sounds like Unique has helped you, that program has helped you understand that.
Right.
Setting up your vision, I think, to me, it's not live or die whether you meet that vision. I think the mere act of setting and establishing a vision in writing, that if you have a team that they all agree on, and you all, I mean, to the person, you all share that same vision, it's that act of creating that and lifting that up and saying, you know, Father, here's what we came up with, right? And it wasn't just me in a dark closet somewhere and then I popped out with a piece of paper. I mean, you know, I used your wise counsel that you surrounded me with. I used your experience and the path that you brought me down to create this thing. What do you think?
Right.
And then, and it's not, the other key for me anyway, I mean, you tell me what you think, but the other key is you don't just create the vision and you lock it away and then pull it out 10 years later. How did I do?
Right.
Right. It's continuously checking and seeing, and are there any adjustments here that we need to be making along the path?
Yeah. And I think, you know, for me, when I mentioned earlier, our call center employees are all remote. You know, I kind of came up with the idea that's what I wanted to do. It was interesting, a gentleman that you know, him and his wife, I found out about them, the folks over at Belay, and read their book. And I was like, okay, that's how I need to do a better job of communicating to them. So what we do is a monthly video call or a video conference, I guess, out to everybody that says, hey, here's what our core focus is and here's what your responsibilities are. You know, for ours, Like I've got them in there. Rapid response is one of our core values. Mm. We want to answer the phone the first time, every time. We don't always, but we want to be that way. Our clients have different things going on, different needs. Air conditioner broke down somewhere. We need the air to be on lower at the other places so that we don't burn up in here. So rapid response to those types of things. Personal touch is another big key for me.
And that's a second core value.
That's the second core value is right. Our personal touch is that we want people to understand that we care about them. Mm-hmm. One of the things I always tell our call center folks is before you answer the phone, smile. Mm-hmm. Because that's going to give you a different way of responding when you answer your phone. You're going to sound better when you smile before you answer the phone. Mm-hmm. So I ask them always to smile. Relentless pursuit, that's more of a core value for me and the company. Mm-hmm. Because, like I said, for me, it's putting together the puzzle, trying to solve all the little nuances to make things work better.
Right.
That relentless pursuit and the ability to look outside the box is very important. Everybody that knows me knows I'm kind of a gadget guy, but it's more of to learn what it can do. And then how can I utilize that to make something better? Hmm. My wife would tell you it's because I like spending money, but that's not it. I really want to understand how things work and see how can we utilize that to make, these restaurants better. Hmm. And then adaptive solutions, which again is from that other one, is to say, don't keep everything inside the box. Look at solar, look at this, look at that. Solar is probably not the best option for a restaurant. There's not a lot of rooftop to put any things on, but that's not to say that there's not options out there. And what are they? Mm-hmm. And then those are our four core values. So one of the things we do in this monthly call is we reiterate all those and reiterate the fact that we want to help people do their best and allow them to let us do our best for them so they can do better.
Right.
And so those core values drive those. And so I try to reiterate them at least monthly. We spend a lot of time on hangouts back and forth. When they're working during the night, I'll be on there with them and kind of guide them through stuff or remember or remind them of different things that we're trying to touch base with. I think you said or someone said that we've got to repeat that 7, 8, 9 times for people to really catch on to what our core values are.
Actually, it's 7. And clearly, I haven't said it to you 7 times because you're saying 7, 8, or 9. So I'm just kidding. You do have to repeat those often. And, as core values, if they are your true core values, they're not aspirational, they're not accidental, they're not paper play. They are your real core values. They will either attract the people that fit on your bus beautifully, or they're going to repel the people who don't. And the sooner we put our core values out there, the better. That includes our customers, that includes our vendors and our partners and employees, frankly, even serves as a guidepost for ourselves, right? It's comforting for a visionary, especially, to be able to look down and go, okay, who am I again?
Right.
Because we tend to have this shiny object thing and we'll chase things that are outside our core focus and we'll change direction because that's frankly how we're built. So all right, but here comes a lightning round.
Okay.
Pioneer Path lightning round. Katie, where's our theme music?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's not queued up right now, but maybe next time.
Boo. I tell you, it's so hard to find.
Hey, I know. I'm the worst.
I actually said that out loud in the microphone. Sorry about that. I'm kidding. All right. Biggest mistake you ever made in the workplace?
Yeah, I would say for me, the biggest mistake was thinking I could do it all on my own. Hmm. I think that part of a visionary is you do so well at what you really enjoy and you think, well, I can do everything that well. And for me, that marketing piece was the key that I was like, man, I really don't know how to do this. Mm. And so what it got me to thinking is, you really have to find people that do this for a living and do it well. And so for me, that was reading a lot, discussing a lot, getting a lot of information from other people about how do I do this better? And I found that with multiple other things. It just allowed me to say, hey, instead of, banging my head against the wall trying to figure this out, do I spend years trying to learn it or do I find somebody that's already learned it and real good at it and just ask them to help me along? That was probably the biggest mistake for the first, we've been in business almost 4, so the first 2.5 to 3 years was thinking I could do everything myself.
Right.
Even though I have time to learn some of that stuff, I thought, I still can't be an expert overnight.
Right.
And so for me, that's been the biggest learning and the biggest mistake of the previous years of the business.
Yeah. So Jim Collins, I may have said something that answers this too. He said, good is literally the enemy of great, right? We can be good at a lot of things, but that will always hold us back. So right. Finding that unique ability, that thing that only you can do for any enterprise, family, business, relationships, just do that.
Right. Good.
Define the word visionary. What does that mean to you? Business visionary.
Business visionary for me, I think the definition for that is one that sees life without borders, and business without borders. Doesn't mean that you go down every trail, but I think a visionary is open to new ideas and seeing how things can potentially have impact. Here's a silly one for me. I'm sure that many of our listeners, all four of them, have heard.
We picked one up. Good job, Katie.
the Google I/O conference earlier talked about, you know, where the phone call was with the Google assistant with doing the hair salon appointment. The first thing I thought was, well, geez, I wonder how we could utilize stuff that would allow a restaurant person to, instead of calling in and saying, hey, I need to change the temperature, even though we give them a mobile app to do that, mm-hmm. most of them prefer to call or text in. Mm-hmm. It's really
nice.
It's a neat thing.
I like it.
But, you know, a lot of it's just, can you change the temperature to 72? Mm-hmm. Sure, done. I thought, well, you know, for me, could we utilize artificial intelligence to take some of those calls and do things like that? And I'm sure that's not on Google's radar. I'm confident it's not. But for me, that's what I thought of. Mm-hmm. And so I think that visionary is the one that it can take all those things and say, does this have a real business use case? Mm-hmm. And if so, what can I do with that? You know, that for me has always been, to me, the way that you solve problems is look beyond what everybody else has done and say, can I pick this? Can I pick that? And make something bigger out of that.
Right, right. Interesting. When we think about visionary, it's the question could be asked always, how can this be better?
Right.
Right. Down here in Atlanta, I hear a lot of redneck visionaries. They all say, hey, y'all watch this. Right. So it's the famous last words, I think. But I'm just kidding with that. So, sees life without life and business without borders, and how do you plug different things together to disparate systems, disparate things to come together to solve real problems? And it's a remarkable opportunity for the person who's great at seeing those things, which I believe you are. Okay, last question in the lightning round.
Okay,
you could fit one sentence onto a fortune cookie. You love these questions. Into a fortune cookie that you could pass down to someone who is 20 years younger, but you think is going to be on a similar path. What would that one piece of paper say? Fortune cookie size, not 8.5 by 11.
Yeah, I think what it would say would be lean on the expertise of others. Mm-hmm.
But not where to find them.
Well, you said I only had a fortune cookie.
True. Fortune cookie visionary speak. I love that. I love it. So what's next for GWT to Energy?
So what's next for us is, obviously our vision right now is to go out there and get more clients. That's what we need to do. Because, you know, I'm sure all people say this, but I truly want to help these guys save money. I mean, that's what I've always been about, is trying to save whoever I work for money. And because of the personal touch, we act like an owner. So for us, it's how can we save more people money? So for that, that's our next step is to continue to encourage folks on how we can help them save money.
And the ideal customer profile quickly would be what?
A restaurant owner that has anywhere from 5 to 200 restaurants. Mm-hmm. Our national account has about 450 mm-hmm. nationwide. So we go all across the nation and handle stuff. So anywhere from that, we can definitely help them, but it would just be advice more than a hands-on approach. Right. But someone's got 5 or more, we would definitely jump in and do whatever we could to help them.
Right. Any other questions for me?
I didn't know I asked any.
Yeah. Well, that's right. I'm on the wrong show again. Keep thinking. Walt, it has been a true pleasure to have you in on the Pioneer's Path. Thank you for sharing your journey your experiences, your mistakes, your victories, what's next, how to get in touch with you is the last question I have.
Sure. It's pretty easy. It's Walt at GWT2, the number 2, energy.com. Our website's www.gwt2energy.com. Either one of those ways are the easiest way to get a hold of us.
Awesome. Katie, what do you have?
Well, that was pretty great. I love how you frame your questions. It's like, you know, like a little fortune cookie. I like that a lot. It's good.
It's a visual on radio. Yes,
I like it a lot.
That's what we do.
Because it really puts it in perspective. Like, you have to fit it on a fortune cookie. It's like, oh, okay. That was good. And of course, the Pioneer's Path would not be made possible without the Terraform Group. And Tim, if you wanted to learn more about the Terraform Group and everything that you're doing, where would people do that?
Go to terraformgroup.com, TerraformGroup.com. GROUP.com.
Learning how to spell on the fly. That's good.
I need a smaller business name. I can't fit that on a fortune cookie. TerraformGroup.com. And if you need to reach out to me via email, it's tim@terraformgroup.com.
Well, great. Thanks so much, Tim. And thanks so much, Walt. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.